I've long believed that many of us pay too much attention to what's going on in the White House and not enough time in the State House. And Olympia will be a very different session this year with restrictions and Zoom meetings and no live testimony, et cetera, and the financial crisis the state faces, plus several others. John Brown, Senator of the 20th District, Lewis County, Centralia, Chehalis area, was selected Republican Senate leader, replacing Mark Scheschler, who was leader for several sessions, but then decided he wanted to spend some time with his grandkids over in Eastern Washington and spend less time with the legislature. So John was elected. John's one of the brightest people in the legislature, especially when it comes to budget issues. And I invited him on the show so we could talk about what we can look forward to, how the Republicans are approaching this session, some of the major issues, and give you guys an idea of what's coming up. And Senator Brown, thank you so much for being with us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Kirby. It's a pleasure to be here.
You bet. Well, I would say congratulations on your elevation, but by the time the session's over, I don't know if you're going to feel that way or not, because you got some tough issues coming up. How do you look at what's coming up in Olympia as the Senate leader for the Republicans?
Well, I appreciate your congratulations, and I think it's a positive thing. Certainly, there's some challenges in front of us, but I'm honored that the folks chose me to help to lead the effort for Republicans as we enter this very unusual session in 2021. We've been pushing, as you know, for a special session for close to, you know, 8 or 9 months now, shortly after that we started into this pandemic, to deal with a number of things for the state. And by and large, those things still need to be dealt with. It's public health. We're still not doing all the things we should be for long-term care. Big challenges in the budget. Now, admittedly, much, much less than we thought a few months ago, but still some significant work to do there. We've been enormously fortunate with the resilience in our economy, but it's fragile, and we got to be careful, make sure we're not doing anything to harm our economy. And then finally, I think we have to find a way to get our kids safely back in school.
Let me ask Senator Brown, the governor's been doing a lot of this as governor with what appears to be very little consultation with either his legislative leadership or the Republicans in terms of ideas on how to approach this problem. Have you been satisfied with the amount of communication and consultation the governor has had with you and the legislature in general?
No, I haven't been remotely satisfied. I think it's been a travesty. He has made decisions in Olympia, being advised really only by his staff or his selected advisors. And I think, you know, regardless of, you know, whether I assume he's working in good faith, but he just hasn't been exposed to the challenges that folks are seeing around the state. And I think that's leading to poor decisions. Admittedly, there's some tough decisions to be made, but we're making them. He's making them without input from around the state. So I think it's been a very poor way to do business in Washington State for the last 10 months.
In terms of revenue forecasts, obviously we've had an economic slowdown and a lot of people unemployed, a lot of businesses closed or restricted. But as I understand it, the revenue picture still looks pretty good. You're just not going to be getting the increases that you anticipated with the economic growth, which has disappeared. And looking down the road, how do you see the revenue projections and the budget, and whether there'll have to be some cuts made, or are you going to be able to get through this without significant cuts?
I think we're in amazingly good shape. If you look at it, our revenue this biennium over last biennium, it is not what we thought it would be in February of this year, but it's still going to grow by 10% over the last biennium. That's amazing financial numbers in the middle of a worldwide pandemic. It's expected, even with a very conservative outlook from the state economist, to grow even more than that in the coming biennium, and then the next biennium beyond that. So if you look at, you know, we look at our budget over 4 years, so we're right at the end of a biennium in next June. We look out 4 years beyond that. Right now, we are, for all practical purposes, balanced over that next 4.5 years. That's really amazing, and that's on a very robust budget. And I could talk in detail about how you could evaluate the budget, but in almost every way, we have a very robust budget. Now, that's not a perfect budget, and there's some things we should do inside of it, but as long as we don't go on a spending spree, there is no need for additional taxes or additional revenue to serve the citizens of the state.
The governor, it appears to me, has caused much of the economic dislocation with his lockdown policies, which he imposed. And yet he seems to be looking at Washington saying, well, you know, President Trump and Congress, they have to give us the aid. We need the feds to come to assist us to alleviate the suffering of the people of the state of Washington. But it struck me, as you look at the revenue numbers, because I do that as part of my job, there is money in the state budget, if the governor wanted to allocate it, that could be used for economic relief, for businesses, even possibly maybe putting off some funding to some new programs. But it seems to me the money's there with a reorientation. But the governor doesn't seem to be looking that direction. He seems to be trying to blame the federal government for not enough federal aid to relieve the people in distress. Would you agree? Your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I would completely agree. This has been a source of frustration for me. We have, you know, if you look at the aid that has already come from our federal government, it is unprecedented in our history. We spent trillions of dollars helping Washington State and all the states in the union through the pandemic. And frankly, the challenge is someday that's going to have to be paid back by our kids or our grandkids. Why don't we? It seems like we ought to just be grateful for the help we got. As I said, we're balanced through the next 4.5 years. What I didn't mention is, on top of that, we have $2 billion in our rainy day fund. So we have the room right now to not only run a very robust, balanced budget, but also make some key investments to help our economy continue to weather its, you know, work its way through this. One thing. And I don't know if you want to talk about this, but we have a huge tax increase based on current law to rebuild our UI trust fund next year, over $1 billion in new taxes. Mm-hmm. Why don't we work on buying that down so our businesses in a pandemic are not faced with a brand new tax they got to figure out how to pay?
Yeah, and also a part of that money has to go to make up for the fraud and the losses to a very inefficient and poorly run Employment Security Department, subject to fraud. I mean, I read in the Seattle Times there are still 27,000 people that apply for unemployment in March that still don't have it. That, in my mind, is shocking that we have unemployed people 8 months or 9 months after losing their job not receive their first check yet.
Employment Security has been a disaster for our state. At every level, whether you talk about, you know, the first audit, and there's going to be, I think, six more, mm-hmm. That it shows we've lost over $600 million. And there's folks that are saying by the time we really get all the true numbers, it'll be over $1 billion in money we just lost. Poor management, and that's at the executive level, you know, in the executive department, poor management. At the same time as we're losing money, and they say it's all gone to Nigerian, fraudsters, but it's hard to tell because they don't share much information. Very maddening. At the same time, you know, citizens in Washington State are waiting weeks, often months, for unemployment benefits. Now recently in the last, you know, few weeks, we started to see ESD come back and say, well, we know we approved that, you know, months ago, but now you're going to have to pay it back. And people are getting bills to replay ESD for 10, 12, 15 grand. It's unbelievable the level of mismanagement at Employment Security. It's just unbelievable.
Yeah, it is. And hopefully there will be some legislative fixes, because if I got to believe, members of the legislature on the other side see this as well. After all, Pat McCarthy, the state auditor, is a Democrat, and I would hope this becomes a nonpartisan or bipartisan issue, because there are people truly hurting out there that thought they had a system they could count on for some relief, and they haven't seen it yet. We're talking again with State Senator John Braun. He is the Republican leader in the state Senate. The legislative session's coming up in a couple of weeks. There are some big issues to cover. You mentioned getting the kids back in school. And I don't think there's any doubt among the experts that not being in school is detrimental to the kids' mental health, especially the younger kids, especially people who are economically disadvantaged or minority students who may not have the resources to keep up with the Zoom learning, distance learning. You've got special needs kids who are hurting, and you've got the CDC saying it's safe to go back to school. What can the legislature do? Because it seems to me this is more the governor, the teachers' unions, and the superintendent of public instruction. What can the legislature do to compel kids to get back into school and reopen the schools?
Well, I think there's a number of things we can do, many of which could have been done by the governor or OSBI or local school boards. And in fairness, there are a handful of schools around the state that are open and have been open, and they deserve enormous credit for their work. You know, while most of the many, I'd say most, of the school districts have been kind of sitting on their hands waiting for clear direction. There are a handful of schools that have just taken upon themselves to figure out how to get their kids back in school safety, and my hat's off to them. But broadly, we have failed our kids, and I think the legislature can provide clear guidance statewide. So, I mean, we want to allow for local control, but there should be a point, you know, and the point I think is at 5% positivity rating on tests, below which schools have to be in session in real time, in person. Above that, allow some flexibility for school boards based on their individual situations, because it's different all over the state. But we got to press to get kids back in school. We've been saying it for months. The science clearly supports that at this point. And it's very frustrating. We've had this kind of imbalanced evaluation for months now, where we only look at the health risk, and primarily we're just looking at the health risk for teachers and administrators, and we aren't considering the mental health risk, the academic risk, the long-term economic risk, you know, the social-emotional risk. It's all been set aside. We're only going to talk about public health risk, and it's wrong. You need a balanced approach, or you're going to do harm, and frankly, we are doing harm to kids across the state right now. And as you pointed out, it's not even. You know, the kids that started in a disadvantaged spot are getting hurt worse. The kids that need special assistance with their education, they're getting hurt worse, and it's just not fair.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, and I wish somebody on the governor's staff, and I, you know, there was some sign of movement this week where he loosened some of the restrictions, but it was a halfway step, maybe a quarterway step, and immediately the teachers' union said, no, we can't do that. We have to be perfectly safe. May not have school until next year. There was an op-ed written in the Seattle Times by a Seattle teacher, a member of the Seattle Teachers Association, about it just isn't safe. We have to do this. It's for the children. They'll catch up. They're resilient. And it seems to me there's this faith that our kids will bounce back no matter how far they're set back. And I just don't think that's true. You can set them back to a point where they can't recover. And I'm concerned about that.
Yeah, we should be. It's frankly unbelievable. Not only are we going to saddle them with trillions of dollars of additional debt from federal debt, we're going to ask them to do it without a proper education. We're also not going to address all the other, you know, all the other challenges they're going to face from not being in school on a regular basis. And on top of that, the research is clear. The research is clear. If you follow some basic safety precautions in-person school is just as safe as not being as doing it remotely. You know, some masks, a little social distancing, wash your hands. These are all things that can and are being done in schools in our state on a limited basis. Most of the private schools are in session. A handful of public schools are in person. But other states around the country, other schools, districts around the world are doing this with enormous success. The research is in. It's all just a made-up excuse to appease the teachers' union. It's wrong. And frankly, when I talk to teachers, they think it's wrong too.
Right. Yeah, a lot of them do. But they have no recourse at the current time with the union and the power that they have. It's interesting. London and England just went through this massive crackdown because they found this mutated strain of COVID-19 that apparently is much more transmissible. And they had to shut everything down, and they closed the trains, and they told everyone to celebrate Christmas. But you know what? The schools are still open.
They got it right. They're thinking, taking a broader perspective and understanding the true public health risks versus all the other risks. And I mean, absolutely, you know, there's going to be some, you know, staff members that have an additional risk, you know, that we can provide accommodations for them. But the risk to children is very, very low. We should be getting them back in school tomorrow. And again, I want to say the schools that are doing this, that are just looking at the pros and cons, recognizing the opportunity, just get on with them. They are doing a tremendous job, and they deserve a lot of credit for because they haven't got a lot of leadership from the Office of Superintendent of Public Instruction or from the governor.
That's right. Two last questions, Senator, and we'll let you go. This session legislature is going to be very different because of COVID-19. As I understand it, there's going to be no public hearings. Everything's going to be by Zoom or by some type of alternate appearance. You're not going to have people in the hallways, Olympia, lobbying, and citizens coming down to talk to you about what you should do. You're not going to have that feedback. Do you have any concerns about public input and how it might impact what you all are doing down there with all these restrictions?
Yeah, I have a number of concerns. That's a great question. It's something that people around the state should be concerned about. You know, we do need to be safe when we're in session. There's no question about this. But there is, but I believe we're going too far. We are limiting the access of citizens to the Capitol building. We are limiting ability to come to Olympia and testify. I think if you're going to do all this, and I don't think you need to. I think you can do all. You can allow more access in a safe way. We have folks going into other. Public, you're going to Walmart today. That's a big, publicly accessible buildings. And you wear a mask, you social distance. You may have a certain number of people that can be in the building at any one time. No reason we couldn't do that in the Capitol building and allow access. And if we're not going to allow access, then we have to be extraordinarily careful to set the controversial topics aside. There are only a few things we really have to do this session. I talked about it earlier. We got some public health things that I think really have to be worked on. The budget, of course. We got to make sure we're protecting our economy for the long term, and we got to take care of schools. And after that, all the other controversial stuff, whether it's new taxes or new regulation, if we can't allow public access, then we should put it on the shelf until 2022.
I'd be with you. Last question for you, having to do with the composition of the Senate. There was one heated Senate race this year within the Democratic Party in the 5th District. Mark Mullett, the incumbent, who's pretty liberal Democrat, but he's a small businessman, so he's a bit more conservative, I think, on budgets and taxes than the average Democrat who has no business experience. The governor and the far left of the party ran a candidate against him. No Republican in the race. Mark won, I believe, by 57 votes. And so their attempt to intimidate a fellow Democrat, force him in line, failed, but not by much. 57 votes is pretty narrow. Your thoughts on how that might impact your ability to work with certain members of the Democratic caucus who might be considered more moderate, if you will? I'm thinking like a Steve Hobbs or a Mark Mullett. If that's going to help you cross the gap, if you will, and work with members on the other side, I might share some of your concerns, given that the attempt to kick Mark out of the party failed, even though very narrowly.
Yes, I think it will. I mean, we've worked on a bipartisan basis with both Mark Mullett and Steve Hobbs for many years. They are very thoughtful legislators. They are moderate. We don't agree on everything, but we agree on budget issues most of the time, and we agree on business regulation issues most of the time. So I think we can find a lot of ways to work across the aisle with them. And I'd point out, they didn't just run somebody against Mark. They put millions of dollars on the line. The governor himself, endorsed his opponent of a sitting legislator, and a very good sitting legislator. It's kind of unbelievable that they would go to this extreme. And I'm very pleased that Mark won. I think it's good for the people of Legislative District Number 5, and it's good for the state of Washington. I look forward to working with him next year.
Well, if you get a chance to talk to him, you can tell him that Kirby Wilbur and John Carlson on KVI endorsed him, and therefore we take credit for that margin of victory, and he owes KVI one, so you might let him know, all right?
I will do that.
All right, Senator John Brown, of the 20th District Republican Senate leader. Senator, thanks for taking time with us today. I look forward to communicating with you a lot during the session. If you need to get a message out to folks, need to get a point of view out, never hesitate to contact us and let us know. All right?
All right. Thanks, Kirby.
Merry Christmas. All right, bye-bye.